Our God is a great God, and His designs are wise. He designed the family as a place where children learn how to get along with others and strengthen relationships. Sometimes we as parents wish our children would learn it somewhere else, but it's our job to teach them how to relate to each other. In this session, Scott and Joanne describe three roadblocks to harmony and then share how to help your children overcome these roadblocks. Joanne starts right out in this session by revealing an important secret to parenting.
One of the greatest sources of frustrations for parents is sibling conflict. Parents often feel overwhelmed by the continual teasing and put-downs and sarcasm and bickering and bossiness and tattling and temper flare-ups and meanness, and the list goes on and on.
Children seem to naturally want to compete with each other, compare themselves to each other, and often the task of getting children to get along can be daunting. One parent describes sibling conflict as any time my two children are in the same room at the same time. Another woman said, my kids don't even have to be in the same room. I think that the problem is easy to see, but sometimes the solution seems impossible. Parents just don't know where to start.
Parents sometimes feel like they're in a prison or a torture chamber, forced to tolerate the continual conflict. Mom, she pushed me. Dad, he's following me. Hey, his piece is bigger than mine.
You know, some parents are deluded into thinking that if they ignore the problem, it will go away. One woman said, when the bickering gets too bad, I just go in my room and shut the door. Parents think that the kids should just be allowed to fight it out, and that's the solution.
That's one solution that parents choose, to let them fight it out. The second solution is that parents often send them to their appropriate places. They try to separate them, thinking that they'll have peace in their family if they can just separate children into their respective places. Unfortunately, what they're doing is they're like a referee in a boxing match. They're sending kids to their appropriate corners. And they do have peace for a little while, but if they don't train them how to deal with their conflict, then what happens is as soon as they come back together, they come out fighting. So we think both of those solutions are inadequate. Letting them fight it out or separating them are not complete solutions for dealing with sibling conflict.
Both those solutions don't have the depth to really solve the problem for children. When parents separate the offenders or just walk away, they're missing out on valuable opportunities to help children grow and to learn. We say that sibling relationships are the first class in relationships that children have, so we can really use conflict in their lives to teach them some valuable things. So we're going to share with you some ideas to help your children. We say that your home is the classroom, you are the teacher, and honor is the curriculum. So each conflict situation then becomes an opportunity to teach your children about honor in relationships.
God created the family as a place to learn and grow. It's a place where we learn to understand how to relate to other people. And children have that opportunity in a family to learn how to relate to people who are different. It's amazing how different the people in a family can be. Not just mom and dad being different, but often children are different from each other. And if children can learn how to relate significantly in that environment, then they will have the skills necessary to grow up and relate to all kinds of other people. Within the family, children can learn to treat others with kindness, how to respond to unfairness or perceived injustice. They can learn to tolerate irritations, manage their anger, and work closely with people who are different. Addressing sibling conflict isn't easy, but what we do when we talk about sibling conflict is we help parents understand how to relate to their children in a way that teaches their kids how to develop the skills that are necessary to be successful adults.
We say that the secret to family harmony is teach children how to honor each other. But that's not easy. In fact, we have found that there are three roadblocks to sibling harmony in the family, and that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to share with you three different roadblocks, and then we've discovered a biblical solution for each of those roadblocks. We want to teach children skills that they can be successful with to overcome the roadblocks. So we're going to talk about each of the roadblocks, and then we're going to talk about a biblical solution that we can equip our children with to overcome those roadblocks. Because in doing that, we'll help you to target your discipline so that you know what you're working on and use conflict situations as learning experiences for your kids.
The first honor roadblock is anger. Anger is probably the greatest hindrance to harmony in a family. Children easily become irritated with each other, often leading to conflict and mean words and actions. Angry outbursts are common in family life. Little Bobby walks into his sister's room and her sister yells at him, "Get out!" Two boys running down the stairs, elbowing each other. They get down to the bottom and they're pushing and shoving each other, wanting to be first. Little Meg starts yelling and hitting when her sister excludes her from a game. Learning to show honor requires that children gain control of their anger.
So the first lesson in this relationship school is anger management. Now, we say that anger is good for identifying problems, but not good for solving them. Often children get into conflict because they use their anger to try and solve their problems. And we say, no, that's not what anger is for. Anger can be a flag to identify there's a problem, but often children take that then and they react with emotion to the situation. And we want to teach children how to manage their anger so that it becomes a flag that something's wrong. And then, sure, the child may be justified in the anger. They might have just been hurt or been disappointed. But don't take that anger then and carry it through to a solution. There are some more helpful solutions that children can learn.
So the first thing we say to kids when they come into us for counseling is anger is good. It's good for identifying problems, but not good for solving them. And when children are used to solving problems with anger, people get hurt. Here are several guidelines for anger management in a home. If you make these a regular part of routine, you'll see tremendous progress. Number one, never argue with children who are angry. Have them take a break and continue the conversation later. Number two, identify the anger cues which reveal that your child is losing control. Point them out early and stop the interaction. Don't wait for explosions before you take action. Number three, help children recognize anger in its various disguises, like a bad attitude, grumbling, glaring, or a harsh tone of voice. Number four, debrief after the child has settled down. Talk about how to handle the situation differently next time. Number five, teach children constructive responses. They could get help. They could talk about it or walk away. These kinds of suggestions help children have a plan for what they should do, not just for what they shouldn't do. Number six, when angry words or actions hurt others, individuals should apologize and seek forgiveness.
Now, children who live with these guidelines can learn to manage their anger, but that's not enough for harmony to develop in the home. We say that honor is treating people special, doing more than what's expected, and having a good attitude. And so we want to teach children how to honor one another. We also want to teach them to be peacemakers, because becoming a peacemaker will help them overcome that roadblock of anger. So we want to give our children a vision for being a peacemaker rather than a problem maker. Now, anyone can get angry, most people do, but few are mature enough to be peacemakers. Being a peacemaker helps to break down the anger in oneself and in others. Peacemakers seek to bring people together. They look for solutions where everyone wins. They think of the needs of others, not just their own needs. They make others feel good. Peacemakers honor others. They promote harmony, and they bring joy to the family because they're looking, how can I bring peace into this situation? That's why Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers.
Now think, if you have a problem with anger in your family, the first thing you want to do is teach your children anger management. But that only gets rid of the problem, and that's a significant problem to deal with, and so we want to be working on it. But then we want to do more than that. We want to add something more. We want to teach children how to be peacemakers. If we can give them a vision for being peacemakers, then we add this honor dimension to family life. That's very important. Listen to what Philip said. He's 16 years old and has one brother and three sisters. I used to have a real problem with anger. My parents helped me with it for several years. I was resistant at first, but then realized the pain I was causing for myself. My parents often told me that angry people are unhappy people. I knew it was true. And now things are different. I've learned how to be a peacemaker both in my home and with others. When I see some of the problems kids at school have, I'm glad my parents taught me how to manage my anger early. I look for helpful solutions when people are upset. The reward is usually a sense of peace in relationships, but there's always an internal peace which comes from pleasing God and knowing I've done the right thing.
Now, anger comes naturally to people, but it damages relationships and it creates distance between family members. So if you target your discipline toward this anger, dealing with the anger, and then teaching children to be peacemakers, you're going to be able to bring some honor into those relationships. So you want to target your parenting so that children learn to be peacemakers. And some of the things that we can teach our children is to look for things in common, not differences. Try to agree, not disagree. Work toward common solutions where everyone wins, not where one person wins and other people lose. You want to use love as a motivation, not anger or meanness. These are things we want to be saying to our children, developing those patterns in them. These are the things we're looking for here. This is how you can be a peacemaker.
Another thing that peacemakers do is they take initiative to solve problems. They see that something's wrong, that people are getting angry, and they try to take action in that situation. Now, one single mom told us the story of how she was working with her four children in this whole area of sibling conflict. For her, the key was separating them and dealing with them individually, giving them ideas about how they could go back into the situation to be a peacemaker. And so she would sometimes just pull one out at a time and say, hey, look, I noticed that that person's getting upset. What are you going to do about it? So she would coach her children separately. Instead of going in and talking to the whole bunch, she would address them separately because each child has dishonoring patterns that look different. And so she would want to help them know what honor looks like just for them. So separating each child, coaching them as individuals, helping them know how to go back into a situation in a healthy way, was something that benefited her quite a bit. It took a lot of work, but her children learned to be peacemakers, and she was very pleased with the results.
Let's talk about tattling for a minute. Tattling is one way that children point out problems rather than trying to be part of the solution. So let's talk about that just for a minute. Now, it's important to teach children what offenses they should report to a parent and which ones they should try and either deal with themselves or overlook. And sometimes children just need to become more tolerant and overlook the offense, but sometimes they need to report that to a parent because it's the right thing to do, and it's not tattling then, it's the right thing. In fact, we teach children to first try and solve the problem yourself. If you can, talk to the other person or whatever you need to do to solve that problem. If you can't solve it with that person and it's not one to be overlooked, then you should report it to a parent because that's the biblical model. If two people can't work something out, they should involve a third person. Now, the way that is reported to the parent is also important, though, because we don't want our children to come whining and complaining to us about what the other person is doing, just trying to get them into trouble. That's tattling them. We want our children to try and solve that problem first and then report it to the parent in a kind way if that needs to be done.
Tattling, a common problem in family life. But if you take it apart and look at it and help children know when and how to report various kinds of information, you can cut that down tremendously. You know, it's fascinating to watch children catch a vision for this whole idea of being a peacemaker. The creative solutions they develop in their relationship are really encouraging. One mom shared this story. My daughter Jenny, who's 8 years old, realized that when anytime somebody else gets angry, it's an opportunity for her to be helpful. And she really took that on as a challenge. This mom was telling us that Jenny had a specific strategy. Whenever somebody was angry, she would go up to them and say, I've got an idea, and then try to share her idea. Even if it was a crazy idea, then it would at least get them talking, and it's amazing how quickly the anger would subside in the other person. She would even do it when around her house with her parents or brothers or sisters. I've got an idea. One time they were at the grocery store, mom was telling us, and they were in a line, mom and daughter, and there was a man in front who was frustrated with how long they had to wait, and Jenny said, I've got an idea, and mom starts to panic, you know, because here's her little daughter talking to this guy, and she was kind of embarrassed, not knowing what to say. But the man, Jenny continues, says, I've got an idea, let's talk while we're waiting. And so the man started engaging Jenny in conversation. It really diffused his frustration and really changed the atmosphere right there in the line as they were waiting. And her mom was quite proud of her that Jenny had learned to be a peacemaker in that situation. What we're trying to help our children do here in this particular roadblock is deal with anger. Anger damages relationships. Anger builds walls in relationships, whether it's parental anger or children being angry. And we want our children to learn how to deal with that anger. But we also want them to go further than that because honor does more than what's expected. So, we want them to learn to be peacemakers. Look for solutions. Look for ways to ease the conflict that exists in a relationship. Anger is the first roadblock to sibling conflict. And the honor solution for anger is learning to be a peacemaker.
The second honor roadblock is wanting to be first or best. Now, it's the second major cause of sibling conflict is selfishness, wanting to be first or best. Children are usually self-centered and demonstrate it in various ways: arguing, boasting, having a better story than someone else, wanting a bigger piece, wanting to be first, wanting to be the best. They're all examples of this roadblock. Children want to be first or best. It seems that children go to great lengths to prove that they're better, loved more, and got there first. One dad found his daughters counting the sprinkles on their cupcakes to see who got more. Children are always trying to compare themselves to each other and figure out where they fall in the family based on some strange criteria they set up.
I like to tell a story of the two guys in the Bible who wanted the best seat. James and John came to Jesus and said, "Could we sit on your right hand and your left hand in your kingdom?" That was in Mark chapter 10. It just reminds me of family life. Children race to get to the front seat of the car. When you're reading a book, you know, they want to sit right next to you. If you have one child, then that child gets a choice of laps to sit on. They can sit on mom's lap or dad's lap. When you have two children, well, they each get a lap. They may not get their first choice, but they can at least sit on a lap. If you're reading a book to three children, well, one of the children gets the not too good seat and can't see the pictures very well. When you have five children in a family, you stop reading picture books. I think that in that story where Jesus was approached by these two guys, another interesting dynamic takes place, because the ten, when they hear about the fact that these two asked such a question, they were indignant. Why were they so mad? Well, I think it's because they also wanted the best seats, and here James and John were just beat them to it. They were gutsy enough to ask, and these other guys weren't. Well, Jesus, in that story, takes the opportunity to teach what we believe is the solution to this roadblock in family life. The roadblock is wanting to be first or best, a common problem not only among the disciples, but often even in our families. And Jesus shared a principle that was so helpful and valuable for families, and that is, he says, if you want to be great in God's kingdom, you need to learn to be the servant of all.
One mother was preparing pancakes for her children, Zachary age 5 and Tyler age 3. The boys began to argue over who was going to get the first pancake. Now the mom saw that as an opportunity to teach something about servanthood to her children, and she said, "You know, boys, if Jesus were sitting here, he'd say, 'Oh, let my brother have the first one. I can wait.'" Zachary turned to his younger brother and said, "Tyler, you be Jesus." Being a servant helps children outgrow the selfishness that they have in their hearts. As you begin to teach this to your children, you want to reward the child who's being the servant. The child who's putting themselves back and putting the other person ahead. That's the child who's going to get rewarded. The child who gives away that first pancake may not get to eat first, but they get the praise of mom, which is really a valuable reward to the child.
Life has a way of showing honor to the person who learns to be a servant. My son Josh worked in a couple of different places as a teenager. He worked in a flower shop and he worked in a Christian bookstore, and they loved him because he would go in as a servant. He'd grab the broom, see what needed to be done. He'd clean up an area. He was looking for things to work on, and they often invited him to come back, and a lot of praise for his ability to work. Why? Because he understood the value of being a servant and how valuable that is in relationships with people. So children often think that if you want to be great or you want to be honored, then you need to build yourself up. One young boy was overheard telling his preschool brother, "All these toys are mine because I was in the family first." You know, sometimes children, they want to be first, or they want to grab everything for themselves. They want the best. In contrast, parents should try to honor the child who sacrifices, who gives someone the best seat, who listens in the conversation without saying, "I know," or who's able to somehow make the other person feel good by being a servant in that relationship.
Being a servant doesn't come naturally. Children seem to be born with the desire to boost themselves up, to compete with each other. "My car is faster than yours. I've seen a bigger dog than that." They want to compete, have a better story, always put themselves forward. Children compete because they want to be on top. They want to be better. Their self-esteem is focused on comparison. If I can show that I'm better than others, then I can feel good about myself. Competition and comparison are a major hindrance to honor in the family. They lead to unhappiness and conflict. Now, one way to help children develop a servant attitude is to teach them that fair doesn't mean equal. A phrase that's often heard in the family is, "That's not fair." That's the basis for a lot of comparison. Children rely on comparison to feel good about themselves in a conflict situation, and it leads to conflict in their life. They want to have what others have. They think they wanted to be treated the same as others, but what they really want is to be treated special.
Rather than trying to treat children equally, it's better to treat each child as unique. After all, each child is different. Very different. So why to try to treat them the same? They have different gifts, they have different abilities, they have different weaknesses, they have different skills which allow them to solve problems or work on things in different ways. So treating children as individuals means that we tell them up front that we're not trying to be fair in that way. We're not trying to treat everybody equally in this family. You know, when you say that to kids, it cuts down on a lot of the competitiveness and comparison. Unfortunately, some parents do. They buy one child something and they get the identical thing for the other child. By trying to treat everybody equally, they actually set up this system of comparison and competitiveness with their children. When someone else gets a bigger piece or gets a longer turn or gets to stay up later, children say, "That's not fair." They believe that fair means equal. But God doesn't treat us all that way. After all, when handing out spiritual gifts, He gives different ones to each one according to their ability. Even in the story of the talents, some got five, some got three, some got one. I really like the story in the end of the Gospel of John where Jesus was talking to Peter and was explaining to him how he was going to die. And Peter looks over at John and says, "What about him?" And Jesus said to Peter, "What is it to you if I allow him to remain until I come again?" Essentially, Jesus was saying, "Mind your own business. You worry about yourself. I don't treat everybody equally. I treat everybody according to their own needs, and I treat everybody special." That's the kind of attitude we want to communicate to our children as well, instead of this idea of, "That's not fair."
In one family, Robert was having a problem dawdling in the morning and being late for school. He was often running late and needed frequent reminders. So Mom chose to use a reward system for him. So she set up a chart, and at the end of the week, there was a reward if he was on time every day that week. Well, his sister Jane complained, "That's not fair. How come he gets a treat and I don't get anything?" But Mom wisely responded, "Robert is getting a treat because he's working on something in his life. If you'd like a chart system, I'll set up something for you too. It's not going to be the same as Robert's, but you can have your own thing that you're working on too, and then we'll reward for that. But we don't try and treat all children the same. You're all different, and we're going to treat you that way."
So one of the ways that we can address this roadblock of wanting to be first or best is to talk about fairness with children so that they can't be saying to us, "That's not fair." A second thing we can do is to address boasting. Boasting is another demonstration of selfishness. "I know how to do that. I can do that better than you." Children try to feel good by exalting themselves. It's as if they're saying, "I can feel good about myself when I tell you how much better I am." Sometimes children think that because they can do it faster or neater, that they're more valuable. But that isn't how God treats us. Each person is rewarded according to their faithfulness before God. We're all running our own race before the Lord. And so we need to teach children not to compare themselves like that. A servant's reward is well done, good and faithful servant. Not based on whether they get the same results as somebody else, but were they faithful with what they had? See, we're treating each child uniquely, and boasting is not acceptable. We need to teach children to compare themselves to themselves and to the goals that are established just for them.
Another way to help children become servants is to teach them how to listen. Listening isn't easy. Most children would rather talk than listen. Children often interrupt, yell at, and talk over each other, trying to get their own point across, and that results in misunderstanding and conflict between them. One mom told how she taught her children to listen. If they were arguing over a toy, she said, "Well, I'd sit the boys down and have them, you know, have the toy away from them up on the table or something, and tell them that they need to talk about it and work out a solution together before they could have that toy back." And then she would work with them, helping them learn to listen to one another, to compromise, to negotiate, to affirm what the other person is saying, and to work together to come up with a plan. That takes listening to one another, but it really comes from servanthood. Each person is serving the other while they're listening and offering a suggestion and working it out. This mom was able to teach her children how to work through that process because of the situation of conflict over a toy. And then after they'd come up with a solution, they would have to report to mom and say, this is what we've decided. And then she had the opportunity to reward the child who was being the servant, who was compromising, who was able to help that solution come to be. So we can teach our children to be servants as we teach them to listen to one another. It can be fun to teach a 5-year-old how to listen to a 2-year-old and negotiate through that process, or 2 8-year-olds have to work together to accomplish something. We can teach our children how to work through to a solution as we teach them to listen to one another.
I hope you're catching the idea here about the role of the parent in this. The parent is neither a referee, nor is the parent an absent parent, just letting them kind of fight it out. But the parent is coaching the children with giving them ideas and techniques to use to relate to others successfully. So it becomes actually a relationship school to try to deal with helping children to be servants in the way that they listen to each other. Another way to help children to become servants is to help them affirm each other in conversation. If you just listen to the conversation of children as they're talking back and forth, you can hear a lot of selfish words, selfish thinking. Children say, I know, often in conversation. Well, we should teach them different ways to talk by saying things like, I agree, or you're right, instead of just launching into their own viewpoint. We teach them to say, hey, that must have been exciting, or wow, you saw a fun thing, and then start telling about their own story. Unfortunately, children often start thinking about what they want to say and they don't affirm somebody else. So affirming in conversation is an excellent way for children to be servants to others in the way that they're talking. Good answers in conversation are things like, oh, or that's interesting, or to start with ask a question. Those are all ways to affirm other people. You know, the larger the family, the greater the temptation is to abuse this area of speech. I mean, you're always fighting to talk over each other. And it's important to be able to listen, to be able to affirm what someone else has said before you launch into what you're saying. So that can be a helpful way to help children to be servants in their relationships with each other.
Another fun way to help children to be servants is with the I cut, you pick rule. Now, this rule is helpful if two children have to share a piece of cake or they're planning to share a candy bar. One of them cuts it and the other one picks it. It comes from the biblical story of Abraham and Lot, where their families and their herds had gotten so large they had to divide the land. So Abraham, being wise, said, I'll cut the land in half, I'll divide it, and then Lot, you can choose which one you want. Well, Lot chose the one that seemed to be a better deal to him, but Abraham was rewarded for his servant attitude. And in the end, the relationship was preserved because Lot was happy with what he got, and Abraham was also blessed in the whole situation. That's the I cut, you pick rule we can teach to our children when they're dividing something.
Another way that you can help children to learn to be servants is to play games together. It's amazing what happens. Who's going to clean the game up afterwards? Or children, you can learn a lot about people when you play games with them because they resort to all of their normal and natural techniques for solving problems and relating to others. And it's a great opportunity to kind of tweak what's going on. Hey, wait a minute. Let's try to say that a little more kindness, or to help children know how to win. That's not easy, winning, knowing how to respond and what to say, or how to lose without getting angry, or how to persevere when you're having a hard time, or how to mercy on somebody when they're losing. I mean, all of those things are great ways to teach honor and good ways to help children to learn to be servants as well. So those are some ways that we can help children learn some valuable skills in their life in regards to being a servant in their relationships with each other.
One last idea about teaching children about servanthood is to have a servant for the day in the family. And this child is the one that takes out the trash and sets the table and does several jobs around the house. But it's also the one that's honored that day. They get to sit in the front seat of the car and they get to get the mail in. They spend the day with mom, you know, just doing different tasks for the family, but are also honored. And mom even has the opportunity throughout the day then to talk about servanthood and caring for others and how to listen and how do we think about the jobs that we're doing. So it's an opportunity to teach children about servanthood, but also about being honored in that position as well. Now, teaching children to be servants will help promote harmony in your family. Becoming a servant will help children to deal with a continual desire to build themselves up while putting others down. Learning to be a servant is a way to honor others in the family, and it brings honor back to the person as well.
We've talked about two of the roadblocks to sibling harmony. We've also tried to give you a vision for your role in this whole dynamic of being a coach to your children. Because as you're a coach to them, you're training them and equipping them with the ideas they need to relate to their brother or their sister, who may be difficult. You may have a hard time relating to that person too. And so it's helpful for your child to learn from you how to best relate. Roadblocks like anger get in the way of sibling harmony. And we want to equip our children by teaching them to be peacemakers. Wanting to be first and best is one of those things that just creeps up into a family because of selfishness that exists there. We want to teach our children to be servants. This becomes the curriculum that you use in your relationship school at home. And what you're doing is you're teaching children how to be successful in life when they get older. After all, it's amazing how often you come to meet somebody in life who's very much like your sister. If you would have learned how to get along with your sister back there, then you'd be able to get along with this person. Or this other person reminds you of your mother, you know, and you go, I can't believe it. Well, if you would learn how to get along with your mother, then you'd be more effective at addressing this person. You see, God places in families to learn to grow and to learn how to relate to other people. And so when we put these principles into practice and we practice them day in and day out with our siblings, then we learn the principles necessary to be successful in all kinds of other relationships. The third roadblock that exists in family harmony we call foolishness. Foolishness is the third roadblock which causes conflict and hinders harmony in a family. Now, Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, was written to children. And I love to read that book to my kids. It has so many practical things in it. And it talks about the fool. Let me read some of the Proverbs from the book of Proverbs that have the word fool in them. Do these things sound familiar in your home? Listen to this. A fool finds pleasure in evil conduct, but a man of understanding delights in wisdom. That's Proverbs 10:23. A fool shows his annoyance at once, but a prudent man overlooks an insult. Proverbs 12:16. A wise man fears the Lord and shuns evil, but a fool is hot-headed and reckless. Proverbs 14:16. A quick-tempered man does foolish things, and a crafty man is hated. Proverbs 14:17. A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions. Proverbs 18:2. A fool's lips bring him strife, and his mouth invites a beating. Proverbs 18:6. A fool's mouth is his undoing, and his lips are a snare to his soul. Proverbs 18:7. He who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame. Proverbs 18:13. It is to a man's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. Sometimes I have my children memorize that verse. Proverbs 20, verse 3. A fool gives full vent to his anger, but a wise man keeps himself under control. Proverbs 29:11. So there are times when I've been working with my children and I feel like they're stuck in a pattern, and that part of their discipline, I'll say, is choose one of these. I'll give them a list of four or five proverbs. You pick one that you want to memorize. Those are short proverbs, but I'll say, memorize one of them. And when you can say it word perfect, then you can go. And so I'm kind of reprogramming their mind, helping them to see how valuable it is to be wise or prudent or understanding instead of being foolish. Children can usually relate to the symptoms of a fool. But Proverbs also talks about being wise. I like to read those verses to my kids too. I won't read them to you, but let me just tell you this, that Proverbs says that a wise person shuns evil in Proverbs 14:16, prepares well in chapter 21, verse 20, makes friends in 11:30, controls his anger in chapter 29, verse 11, and is responsible in chapter 10, verse 5.
Children often act foolishly, not thinking about how their actions might hurt someone else. Alice, age 4, and her brother Andy, age 3, and Emily was 10 months old, were all playing together in the living room, and the babysitter was there, and she went into the kitchen to get some milk and cookies, and she heard the baby scream. So she went running back, and there Alice was pinching the baby, and she said, Alice, what are you doing? And Alice said, well, we're playing ambulance and Emily's the siren. Now, sometimes, don't you just wonder why kids are doing the things they're doing? You just want to pick them up and look them in the face and say, why? You know, they just don't think about what they're doing. They don't think about the consequences of their actions. They're being foolish.
Foolishness. It often involves silliness or teasing or just being wild sometimes, not taking into account any consequences that might be present. Foolishness is a dangerous thing for children, and it's important for us to help them. So how do we do it? Well, we want to help them to be wise. That's the solution to this roadblock of foolishness. And one of the first things that children need to learn how to do is to admit, I was wrong. Foolish children don't take responsibility for their actions. They say, oh, I was just playing, or he started it, or he hit me first. Those are common excuses for hurtful behavior. Blaming and excusing are the signs of a fool. You watch your child when you confront him or her. What do they say? Do they say, okay, I was wrong? Or do they enter into one of these things? Typically, they're going to blame or they're going to excuse. That is foolishness in and of itself. So the first thing we can do if we want children to change is we help them take responsibility for their actions, for their foolish actions. And we do that by asking them, what did you do wrong? So if a child's foolish, you say, wait a minute, well, you just need to go take a break for a minute. Sometimes it's so that we can settle down. But anyway, they come back, and when they do, we say to them, what did you do wrong? We'd encourage you to do that often. What did you do wrong? Ask the child, what is it that they need to address here? What was the problem that got them into this situation in the first place? Now, a child who says, I didn't do anything wrong, needs to go back and sit down and take a break and think about it some more. Or maybe we need to teach them what they did wrong, but don't just say it to them. Have them repeat it back. I'm going to ask the question again. What is it that you did wrong? See, what we're trying to do here is help children take responsibility for their actions. Foolish people don't take responsibility for their actions. And so we're teaching children to take responsibility by saying, I was wrong in whatever situation has come about here.
Children often act foolishly and thoughtlessly, and they end up irritating others. This is foolishness. They need to learn to anticipate the results of their actions and use self-control when their impulses are going to hurt or irritate other people. One mom told a story of a typical problem in her home. It was a cold winter day, and her daughter Colleen went out the front door to get something she had left in the car, and she was going to be coming right back in, while her younger sister Amy closed and locked the door. As soon as Colleen got out, Amy thought that was funny, that she was going to close and lock the door on her sister, but her sister was cold and irritated. It created conflict in the family. Mom saw what was going on, and later she talked to Amy about it, and she said, hey, it looks like Colleen didn't appreciate your little joke. Well, Amy said, I was just playing around. She didn't mean to cause a problem. But Mom said, I realized that you were just having fun, but you were having fun at Colleen's expense. It's good to be funny, but if you get enjoyment out of hurting other people, then something's wrong. I know you didn't mean to hurt Colleen, but you need to think about the consequences of your actions and make wiser choices.
Another way that we can help children to be wise has to do with this issue of the stop rule, that we encourage every parent to have a stop rule in their family. It addresses things like teasing and tickling games that get out of hand. Sometimes parents ask us, is teasing ever okay, or should we outlaw it altogether in our family? Well, you know, teasing is fun. It can be an enjoyable thing for the family. But the problem with teasing is often one person wants the game to stop before someone else does. And so we end up creating conflict in the relationship. Sometimes it's between dad and his little son, tickling and tickling and tickling until the boy, he starts crying because he wants to be done, but he doesn't know how to stop what's going on. Well, we encourage parents to use the stop rule. The stop rule essentially says that any child can end the teasing game by just saying stop. And when they say stop, that's the end. And it's important then for parents to be able to enforce the stop rule in a family. But it also applies to parents. In fact, it's a great way to teach it is to tickle your child and tickle until they say stop. But when they say stop, right away you stop. You're teaching them the value of the stop rule and how it works in family life. You know what that teaches children? It teaches them the value of their words. They don't have to resort to manipulative techniques. They don't have to resort to hitting or yelling or screaming. In fact, I think that many of us, had we learned the stop rule earlier on, it would have made life a lot easier for us as we're getting older. The stop rule teaches people the value of their words. Now, if you hear someone saying stop, you want to be quick to step in and enforce the stop rule in your family. If a child says stop and the other child doesn't stop, then they need to be able to appeal to someone who's going to step in and enforce the stop rule in the family. Julie, age 15, was playing with her brother, Gordon, who was 12. They were playing a tag game, but Julie wanted to be done before Gordon was ready to be done. In fact, Gordon, even though Julie said stop, Gordon didn't know how to stop. He would just keep going and going, you know, becoming irritating. Instead of Julie becoming ugly and mean and hurtful to her brother, she went to her dad and said, "Dad, I asked Gordon to stop. He's not stopping. Would you help me?" Dad stepped in and helped Gordon stop in that situation. You see, the stop rule is a fantastic cue in family life to help everyone know that we're done playing this game. Occasionally, you'll have a child who will say stop, like time out, and then time in again, and you know they'll want to play some more. And say, that's not a proper use of the stop rule. One time, one of my kids, you know, he holds up his shirt to be tickled, and you know, I go and tickle him, and he'd say, stop, and then he'd hold up his shirt, stop it some more, you know. But you get the idea of the stop rule. It's a valuable tool in a family. It's a cue that people can give to each other that means, I'm done with this game. I don't want to play it anymore.
Children can be downright mean to one another. In fact, unmonitored sibling conflict can often turn into habits of meanness rather quickly. One mom of three young boys said, "My baby's first word was ow." Sometimes meanness comes from built-up anger of perceived injustice. In one family, two teenage boys continually picked on their little brother Danny, who was 11 years old. They put shaving cream in his shoe, hid his baseball mitt in the trash, and tied string around the legs of his bed and dresser so that Danny would trip when he got up in the morning. Now, Danny never responded to them. He seemed to just ignore and overlook the offenses and didn't respond back. So the brothers felt guilty after a while, and one day they said to him, "We've decided to stop playing mean tricks on you." And Danny said, "So you're not going to hide my baseball mitt anymore?" "No." "You're not going to put shaving cream in my shoes anymore?" "No." "You're not going to tie string in my room anymore?" "No." He said, "Okay, I'll stop spitting in your soup."
The whole problem of meanness is one that we really need to address here, because meanness is really a combination of all three roadblocks put together. You've got anger often. You've got wanting to be first and best as one child dominates another. You've got foolishness involved in that situation. So meanness is a very important issue for us to deal with. It's really the opposite of being wise, being honoring in a family. And we really have to take it apart, because we have to help the child who's being mean, and then we have to help the child who's being mean to, the victim, who may not altogether be innocent. But we'll talk about him in just a minute. Let's talk about the child who's being mean. If you have a child who's being mean, then that's unacceptable. And the best way to secure change in family life is to start with a parent-child evaluation meeting. We've talked before about what a parent-child evaluation meeting is, but essentially it's a meeting that you have at a time when things are calm and sane in your family, and you share three things that your child's doing well or that you appreciate, but then you say, you know, there's one thing that I've noticed that's a problem, and I want to share that with you because it's just causing some problems in family life, and that is, I've noticed you've been being mean to your little brother. And that's not acceptable in our family. It's not honoring. It's going to create problems with you. It's going to create problems between you and your little brother. So we need to do something about it. And so when you're tempted to be mean, we're going to make some changes in that. Now, you may just start by making that statement in a parent-child evaluation meeting, and then in the course of the next week, just start making observations. That's the meanness I was talking about. And so just making observations is often very helpful. But you may need to add taking a break and say, look, what you just did was mean. I want you to take a break for a few minutes, think about it, and come back and talk to me. When they come back, we say, what did you do wrong? And we talk about meanness and alternatives to what they were doing. But still, we may need to add more than that. We may say to a child, you know, I've noticed you've been being mean, and so every time that you're mean, I'm going to stop, have you take a break, and then I'm going to have you come back, and we're going to find two kind things you can do to your little brother that would take the place. So we want to build some positive habits here of kindness in your relationship with your brother. But those are all corrective methods. If we have a child who has a problem with meanness, they've developed some patterns, some even some ways of thinking, and what we want to do is give them some proactive solutions too. So we may say to a child, I'm going to have you come and see me every evening at 5 o'clock. I pick 5 o'clock because that's one of the most difficult times in family life, is right before dinner. So at 5 o'clock, I want you to come and see me, and I'm going to have you do 2 acts of kindness in our family. You can choose what they are. I'll give you ideas if you want, but I want you to find 2 things. You'll talk about it with me. You'll go do them, report back to me, and then you can go again. 2 acts of kindness. Or we might talk about secret acts of kindness that are done in a family. So nobody really knows who did them, but somebody did something. And all of these are designed to reprogram the way a child is thinking about others. Meanness is unacceptable. We're going to work on this in our family. We're not going to allow it to continue. We're going to look for ways to be kind instead of just being mean to others. Now, that deals with the person who's being mean. Let's talk about the victim, the so-called victim. Often they're really not, they're victims, but they provoke their older brothers and sisters, and they have their way of being mean and irritating and continuing on, and so they ask for it, and finally somebody's mean to them, and they start crying. Well, we have to teach them too, and certainly we can tell the older one that if your brother's doing that, then you come and talk to me and we'll discipline him. But if a child is being a victim of meanness, we want to teach them how to handle that. One, we want to help them to know where the guilt belongs. So we're going to help the child by saying, your older brother is wrong in the way he's treating you sometimes. Things that he says or pushes you or hits you or whatever, that's wrong. And so I want to agree with that child so he knows that it's not his fault, that he understands where the guilt lies, number one. Number two, I want to help that child not to build resentment and bitterness toward another child, which means that to a great extent he's got to let it go. And so I may say, look, if your brother's mistreating you, come and talk to me, and I'll spend some time with you. And, I'm sorry that he's doing that. It's a wrong thing that he's doing. So come and talk to me, and we'll try to work on it somehow. Maybe I can discipline him. Sometimes you can't. When you're dealing with a teenager, sometimes you're just going to work with the younger one. You do what you can with the older one. But the younger one, you're just trying to say, come and talk to me. I'm sorry that that's happening. I'll do what I can to try to work this out, but I know it's hurtful. So we're trying to help them not build resentment or have a problem. The child who's a victim also needs to learn about honor and what it means to forgive or to treat people kindly. So I'm going to be working on both ends of this whole situation. We're talking here about the third roadblock, which is foolishness. It leads to all kinds of conflict in family life. We want to teach our children to recognize foolishness when they see it. It's not good enough to wait till they become teenagers and hope they grow out of it, because unfortunately, teenagers engage in foolishness with bigger toys. They just get themselves into bigger foolish problems. So it's important for us to train our children when they're young to be able to see foolishness, to talk about how it's foolish for that person to be doing what they're doing, and try to troubleshoot that and work on it early on to prevent some of the problems that can happen later. Sibling conflict provides opportunities to observe foolishness and then to teach children how to be wise.
You can use sibling relationships to teach honor to your children in your family. Anger, wanting to be first and best, and foolishness are 3 roadblocks to family harmony, and they're the arena where a lot of conflict takes place. So you can take those opportunities and really target your parenting to address each of those areas and teaching your children how to overcome those roadblocks in their lives. Really, the conflict that you see among your children can be seen as an opportunity to teach your children about relationships. And you'll want to teach them each individually. Each of your children are at a different stage. They're working on a different thing. They're struggling in a different area. So you want to create a strategy for each one of your children, really. What is it that each of your children need to develop right now in their life? And it'll change over time. But discipline them individually, have different strategies for each one, and work on those specific things with your children. Many parents view negative behaviors as just a stage, something their children are going to outgrow. Unfortunately, that's a mistake, and children grow into negative behaviors rather than growing out of them. So use these unhelpful patterns now as opportunities to teach your children positive relationship skills.
One mom was out with her six children at the park, and a man came up to her and said, "Lady, are all these your kids, or are you out on a picnic?" She looked at him up at him and said, "Mister, these are all my kids, and believe me, it ain't no picnic." I think some parents feel that way when they address sibling conflict in their families. It's not an easy issue to address. It means continual work and frustration sometimes as we feel like we're dealing with the same things over and over again. But it becomes the curriculum for our children, and it teaches them eventually how they're going to relate to others. Sibling conflict and rivalry have been around since Adam and Eve's kids. You think back on some great heroes of the faith, even Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Fathered families where sibling conflict caused the family to fracture and separate and move apart. That's really sad when that happens. It's important for us to be able to address it so that we can prevent some of those terrible things from happening in family life. We don't just turn our heads and look away. We help our children learn to be peacemakers, learn to be servants, learn to be wise. I really like Joseph, what he said after he revealed himself to his brothers in Genesis. He sends them back to get his father, and he says to them, "Don't argue on the way." Joseph knew the tendency of brothers to argue on the way, and we know the same thing with our kids. But we want to work with them. We want to prepare them for dealing with each other. So you look at every conflict situation as an opportunity for training, an opportunity to develop some skills in our children. The roadblocks are anger, foolishness, and wanting to be first and best. And those roadblocks cover most of the problems that happen in family life. We want to teach our children to be peacemakers, to be servants, to be wise. We want to teach our children to honor each other.
This concludes this session. We trust that you have benefited from the Ministry of Effective Parenting. If you would like information about other resources available through Effective Parenting, just call area code 609-771-8002, or you can call toll-free 1-800-771-8334. Thank you very much for joining us for this session, and may God richly bless you and your family.